In the ninth year of famine and flame, when the earth cracked and the rivers withdrew, a maiden of Athens, Lysithia, daughter of Timareti, came to Eleusis seeking the mystery. She was of unwashed hair and fasting mouth, her bare feet against the bones of the sacred way. For 9 days and nine nights, she had tasted neither meat nor fire, nor spoke any word but the sacred formula whispered by the priestesses in black. When she came to the gates of the Telesterion, the temple of the deepest night, the hierophants bound her eyes with shadow. They led her by torchlight into the yawning dark, where no mortal flame was permitted to burn. There, beneath a roof older than the gods, the voice of the earth itself asked, "Do you know what it means to die and be reborn?" And before her breath could shape an answer, the floor split like a wound. Lysithia fell. She fell not into the earth, but through the veil of all living things. Through loam and heat, past blind worms and the songs of the unborn, she dropped into the marrow of the world. Her flesh grew thin. Her thoughts unraveled, her heartbeat slowed until it was a bell tolling beneath the ribs of the cosmos. She died, not as the body dies, but as fire dies in wet wood. And in the deepest chamber of silence, Persephone came to her. The queen of the shades and seeds stood wreathed in dusk, crowned in flame, her mouth red with secrets. One eye burned with spring, the other wept rot, and in her hands she bore a pomegranate split like a heart. Persephone said, "Come, see what lies beneath the veil," and the maiden obeyed. The queen led her through the fields of the nameless, where the dead wandered, pale and without memory, their hands like drifting petals. Some of them wept for the sun. Others had forgotten it. They reached for Lysithia, but the queen forbade them with a glance. Then she led her through the river of mirrors, where time flowed backward. There, Lysithia saw herself as a child, as infant, as a spark, as dust. She watched her mother's face grow young and then vanish. And then deeper, into the chamber of the seeds, where every soul lay dormant, curled like thought within soil. Persephone took one seed into her hand and said, "This was you, and this you shall be again." Lysithia wept, but her tears turned to pomegranate seeds. Persephone offered the fruit, "Eat and know." Lysithia took a bite, and as the juice touched her tongue, she was pierced by knowing. She saw that life is only the mask of death, that death is not darkness, but germination, that all who fall shall rise again if they pass through the root and the rot. The seed within her soul split, roots wound through her ribs, a flower of light burst behind her eyes. She cried out and was silent. And then the torches were lit again. Lysithia awoke on the floor of the Telesterion. Her breath steamed, her skin glowed faintly, her mouth was stained red as blood. Around her, the priestesses knelt. They crowned her in laurel. They named her the daughter of the dark, the sister of the seed, bride of the second birth. For she had died, she had seen, she had returned. From that day forth, Lysithia walked the world with the dark behind her eyes. She feared no winter, no silence, no grave, for she had eaten the fruit of the queen. And once one has known the beauty in terror and the terror in beauty, one can never be made undone. In the landscape of Demeter's worship, particularly within the Eleusinian mysteries, The priestesses who served her were often known as Melisse or Melissa, a name that translates to bees. This title conveyed a profound theological symbolism. In the ancient world, bees were revered as liminal creatures, messengers between realms who moved from flower to hive as souls from life to death and back again. Likewise, the Melisse functioned as spiritual intermediaries, guiding the living into sacred knowledge and guarding the threshold between human sorrow and divine regeneration. Just as bees tirelessly tend their hive, the Melisse tended the spiritual well-being of their communities, enacting rites that aligned personal grief with cosmic cycles. The priestess of Demeter Kore was an adult married woman of childbearing age, with the notable exceptions of Demeter Chthonia, who were drawn from postmenopausal crones. While the specific functions of these priestesses remains partially veiled by the mysteries themselves, we can reasonably postulate that they played a central role in ceremonies as cupbearers, as assistants who offered prayers to the goddess. They poured libations and held sacred space for rituals of descent and return. They may have sat in silence with initiates during ritual lamentations, echoing Demeter's own mourning for Persephone. Through keening, chanting, or the rhythmic hum of invocation, they likely anchored vibrational fields for healing, transformation, even transmission. In the 3rd century CE, Porphyry, a Neoplatonist philosopher, wrote these words: "The ancients gave the name of Melisse, or bees, to the priestesses of Demeter who were initiates of the Chthonian goddess. The name Melitodes to Kore herself, the moon Artemis, whose province it was to bring to the birth, they were called Melissa, because the moon being a bull and its ascension the bull, bees are begotten of bulls, and souls that pass to the earth are bull begotten." In Servius's 4th century commentary on Virgil's Aeneid, a striking and somber tale emerges, one that deepens our understanding of the sacred bonds between Demeter and her priestesses. According to this late antique source, Demeter herself initiated a woman named Melissa into her mysteries, binding her with an oath of silence regarding the rites that she'd undergone. True to her vow, Melissa refused to divulge the divine secrets, even as the women of her community, who were gripped by jealousy and restless curiosity, pressed her relentlessly for answers. Her refusal became intolerable to them. In a fit of collective madness, they tore her limb from limb, desecrating the very body that had become a vessel of divine knowledge. In response to this brutal act, Demeter enacted a chilling yet symbolically potent form of vengeance. From Melissa's severed head, bees sprang forth, creatures forever linked with divine wisdom, secrecy, and sacred service. Thus, Melissa was transfigured in death, becoming not only a martyr to the mysteries, but the mythic progenitor of the Melisse, the bee priestesses who would continue to guard Demeter's rites. The image of bees erupting from her skull transforms an act of violence into a mythopoetic symbol of resurrection and unbroken mystery, a warning against the profane pursuit of sacred truths, and a testament to the enduring power of devotion kept in silence. From the ancient Greek poet Pindar's Pythian Ode, we learn that women initiated into Demeter's mysteries, and especially her festival, the Thesmophoria, they were called bees, and by extension, the priestesses of the rite are also known by the same name. The Bee of Melissa, or Melisse, was to teach that grief is not weakness, but initiation, the passage through which one comes to know the deeper seasons of the soul. As guardians of secret doctrine, they likely preserved and transmitted hidden knowledge, which was associated with fertility rites, the lunar mysteries, and the cycles of the land and the womb, as well as the divine choreography of loss and return embedded in the Eleusinian tradition. In Callimachus's Hymn to Apollo, We see priestesses, or maybe actual bees, carrying water to her. And so it reads, "And not of every water do the Melisse carry to Dio, but of the trickling stream that springs from a holy fountain, pure and undefiled, the very crown of waters." Perhaps they even carried oracular sight, delivering messages not only from Demeter, but from the living earth herself. In every gesture, the Melisse embodied the sacred tension between silence and utterance, concealment and revelation, vessels of a truth that could only be received by those who had learned how to descend. So, why connect with the goddess Demeter today? First and foremost, she teaches the sacredness of grief and return. Demeter's myth, especially her search for Persephone, acknowledges that loss is sacred. She is the grieving mother, the mourner, the woman who withholds the fruits of the earth in protest of injustice. In a culture that often rushes past grief, Demeter invites you to honor the descent, to sit with sorrow, and to understand that mourning is not weakness, it is initiation. For anyone navigating loss of a loved one, identity, their homeland, or purpose, Demeter walks beside you, reminding you that rebirth begins in the dark. Number two, she grounds you in the rhythms of the earth. As a goddess of agriculture, Demeter roots you in natural cycles, seasons of sowing, resting, growing, and harvesting. Her energy is deeply feminine, it's earthy and cyclical. In times of burnout or spiritual fragmentation, she reminds you to slow down, tend to your inner soil, and allow space for regeneration. She helps people that are struggling with disconnection, whether from the land, their body, or spirit, and to return home to themselves. Number three, she honors motherhood in all of its forms. While known as the mother of Persephone, Demeter represents more than just physical motherhood. She symbolizes spiritual mothering, mentoring, protecting, initiating, creative motherhood, birthing art, new ideas, or even new paths, and even grief and motherhood, the pain of separation, the pain of loss, and even release. For women, or really anyone experiencing complex relationships with motherhood, whether nurturing or being nurtured, Demeter holds the tension and the beauty of these bonds with immense compassion. Number four, Demeter is a guardian of women's mysteries. Demeter presided over the Eleusinian Mysteries, the most revered spiritual rites of the ancient Greek world. These were sacred initiations that dealt with the mystery of death and rebirth, especially through the feminine lens. Working with her today can reconnect you with that ancient wisdom about life cycles, soul-deep initiation, and the sacred role of women as life bearers, death guides, and even truth keepers. She is especially powerful for those who are called to ritual, to priestess work, or even soul midwifery. Number five, she reminds you that justice is a sacred force. Demeter does not accept the violation of her daughter. She withholds her gifts from the world until justice is acknowledged. She teaches that the earth and the body are not to be exploited, that boundaries are sacred, and righteous anger, when rooted in love and truth, is a transformative force. In an era of ecological collapse, in an era of social injustice and spiritual exhaustion, Demeter empowers you to stand up, reclaim your voice, and protect what is sacred. And number six, it is because she is still here, waiting, in dreams, in seeds, in silent mourning, and in every return to life after devastation. Demeter still speaks. If you felt lost in winter, she offers the promise of spring. If you're seeking meaning in descent, she shows that even the underworld has purpose. And if you long to nurture the world, she reminds you to start with yourself. If you would like to connect with the goddess Demeter, here are some altar offerings for consideration. Number one, torches. Remember, she carried a pair of torches in her search for Persephone, the sword or the sickle. Demeter was also called the Lady of the Golden Blade, after the sword or sickle which she wielded. Don't forget that she wielded a great sword during the War of the Giants. And this blade, it may have been a golden sickle, which she used to harvest the first crops of the wheat. So either one will do. Also consider the Draconis and the chariot. Remember that Demeter's chariot car, it was drawn by a pair of winged Draconis, or dragons, or serpent-like beasts. So something like that is a consideration. And then we have the pig and the turtle dove, both of which are sacred to Demeter, and yes, Aphrodite as well, but sacred to Demeter. Consider barley, mint, the poppy, sunflowers, and then mixing red wine with mint, which we find from the Homeric hymn to Demeter. All of these are considered great offerings to Demeter, but also she really does love sunflowers. Demeter has a whole host of epithets. I myself have identified at least 20, and I'm sure there are even more. I will leave a list on my Medium page if you're interested of all of the epithets that you should consider. But just know that some of the epithets include bringer of the seasons, all nourishing and bountiful, giver of goodly fruit, beautiful crowned, lovely haired, golden haired, bright goddess, pure, chaste, and holy, queen lady, venerable, glorious, noble goddess, all holy Demeter, verdant goddess, Demeter besought by prayers, Demeter of the sacred laws, Demeter of the below, of the deep earth and of the underworld, Demeter of the good harvest, and then the goddess of the mysteries, Dea Mystica, is the great light that lies beyond the ordinary light, and that is another epithet for the goddess Demeter.
And this concludes the episode of The Theology of the Field, Ancient Goddess Demeter in Ancient Greece.